Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us at the Human Rights for Prisoners March here at Human Rights Demand Channel on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Mary Neal. I'm the director of the Human Rights for Prisoners March. We march across the internet and demand human rights for all prisoners. And this is very important, especially today. Yes, prisoners are being tortured in America. They're being tortured with solitary confinement, actual brutality, and some are killed. My brother, Larry Neal, was secretly snatched off the street in Memphis, Tennessee in July during a heat wave in 2003. He was secretly incarcerated and murdered in Memphis Shelby County Jail. After his secret arrest and murder, the United States Department of Justice, which was an overview of that correctional facility, how dare they? How dare they call these places of torture correctional facilities? But he was secretly murdered there after 18 days of lying to the Neal family, lying to Larry Neal's social worker and denying that he was in custody. Was this a mistake? Was it a mistake? Yes, it was a mistake, but it was no accident. Larry Neal was what is known as a frequent flyer through that jail. He had been arrested just a few weeks before his fatal arrest. His fingerprints were on record. They received missing person reports about Larry Neal or John Doe meeting his description. They knew that this was a heart patient who needed his prescription drugs. They knew that this was a mental patient who needed his psychiatric medicine. But they were, as they told my brother, tired of fooling with Larry Neal. Yes, our police officers, our jails and prisons get tired of their enforced role as psychiatric caretakers. They get tired of being bothered with people who sing loud outside, who beg for quarters from passersby. They get tired of telling the mentally ill to move on. They get tired of clearing the homeless out of the business section. And now and then, they show just how fed up they are because they kill some. I said they show how fed up they are by killing the homeless mentally ill, by killing mentally ill people with homes but who are not at home. Occasionally, they even go into people's homes and kill the mentally ill. Mentally ill people have no recognized and protected right to life in the United States of America. You can do homicides on the mentally ill and nothing at all will happen to prison guards, jail guards, and police officers who murder mentally ill people inside America. It doesn't really matter whether they're black or white. Kelly Thomas was murdered on film by police in California. And even though the police officers went to trial, the jury decided that it was right for them to beat Kelly Thomas to death. He deserved death because he was psychotic. He deserved death because he was homeless. That's what the jury decided. But when a jury makes such a toxic decision as that, it is up to the United States Department of Justice to uphold the law and to bring those police officers up on federal charges. And to date, that has not happened. To date, that has not happened. So Kelly Thomas's murderers walk the street among us. What are we to do, ladies and gentlemen? What are families of severe mental patients to do? Are we being forced to go back to the days of old when our mentally ill loved ones were locked at home in the attic. We're locked down in the basement because it's not safe. Not necessarily because they are dangerous. My brother Larry Neal was not a dangerous person. He was a paranoid schizophrenic. He was more afraid of anyone than people could be afraid of him. But should we lock our mentally ill loved ones in attics? Should we lock them in garages and basements? Should we have to lock them in their bedrooms because we fear the police will kill them? Has this climate gotten so backward? Have we gone back to the 14th century England where the mentally ill were locked away in basements, locked away in attics, locked away in little closets because the people would harm them? Yes, that's the day that we're coming to in the United States of America because police regularly kill mentally ill people. Never does a week go by that a police person has not killed a mentally ill person. Never. I can give you one a week every week, and some weeks it's triple that. I want you to know that since Larry Neal's murder cover-up is sanctioned in Washington, since his secret murder in Memphis Shelby County Jail, other jails and prisons have started also covering up the murders of mentally ill prisoners. Yes, since Larry Neal's murder cover-up is sanctioned in Washington, D.C. by the federal government, other jails and prisons have started simply covering up when they murder mentally ill Americans. The idea has caught on now that the mentally ill have no right to life that's protected by the only agency that is charged and that collects your tax money. The U.S. Department of Justice, everybody down there gets a check, and their check is comprised of your tax money and my tax money and the tax money of the families of mentally ill people who they refuse to protect. So they're taking our money under false pretenses because one of the stated reasons for existence of the Department of Justice is to protect institutionalized people and to protect handicapped Americans. Those are two of the stated reasons for the Department of Justice, yet they are taking our money under false pretenses. That is fraud. They are taking our money fraudulently because they will not, they refuse to do their job. They refuse to do their jobs. And so I say to you that since Larry Neal's murder in Memphis Shelby County Jail was covered up, they've started killing other mentally ill prisoners and covering up their murders. Another body surfaced last week. State prison officials failed for 17 months to tell the state health department about the death of an inmate at San Carlos Correctional Facility. The correction staff can be heard on the video laughing and joking while the inmate was dying. Christopher Lee Lopez died on March 17, 2013, while stripped and shackled. He suffered from a schizoid affective disorder, bipolar type. And they murdered him, they laughed while he died, and they kept it from going to the health department. They refused to report it to the authority where they were supposed to report it. Memphis Shelby County Jail murdered Larry Neal, and they kept the report from the United States Department of Justice. That jail had already been sued by the USA for abusing prisoners' human and civil rights. It had been sued by the USA, and it had been placed under the overview of the very criminal Justice Department. And the Justice Department joined hands with Memphis Shelby County government officials to hide and cover up Larry Neal's murder. The United States Justice Department accepted fraudulent reports that it knew were fraudulent.
because those reports omitted Larry Neal's name. His name had been deleted from arrest reports. His name had been deleted from anything connected with the reports that Shelby County Jail gave to the USDOJ, according to the USDOJ. The USDOJ answered one of my Freedom of Information Act requests, and they claimed that they had never heard of Larry Neal in connection with Shelby County Jail. They said this before their release hearings from Memphis Shelby County Jail, and they reiterated that after the hearing. So if you had never heard of it before the hearing, how in the world did you go into court with those liars and let them again give you fraudulent reports that omitted a dead inmate's name after you had communicated extensively with his family about his secret arrest and murder? How is it that this same correctional facility was able to give you fraudulent reports not once, but twice, even after you knew that they were fraudulent? It's because you are fraudulent, Department of Justice. You are fraudulent. You are collecting Americans' tax money for jobs that you will not do. You refuse. You refuse to protect the rights of institutionalized people in America. You refuse to protect the rights of handicapped people in the United States. Instead, you join hands with murderous police and help them get off. You join hands with murderous correctional facilities and help them hide their bodies. And because you helped to hide Larry Neal's murder, other correctional facilities are now hiding the murders of mentally ill inmates. That's why Carlos is correctional facility hid. This man's death, Christopher Lee Lopez, who died in March 2013, and they're just now releasing the information 17 months later. That's why they did it, because they know that the Department of Justice won't do its job. They know they're allowed to murder mentally ill people behind bars and hide it. They know you won't do anything about it because you condone such murders. Do they pay people in the Justice Department to withhold federal investigations? Do they pay people in the Justice Department to withhold federal charges when they murder our mentally and physically disabled relatives and friends and neighbors? You know, back in 2008, former Vice President Dick Cheney and former Attorney General Antonio Gonzalez were both indicted along with some judges and other high officials in Wallace County, Texas for doing just that. They were indicted for withholding federal investigations and withholding federal charges after the murders and brutality to inmates. They were indicted for accepting kickbacks from jails and facilities that hurt inmates in exchange for kickbacks. But they never went to trial, so I can't say definitely that they did it. I can say definitely that the grand jury in Wallace County, Texas, was impressed enough with the information that was given them by the BNDA that they did turn in an indictment on these high officials while President Cheney was a sitting vice president. So I submit to you that I believe they must have had some powerful evidence that people high up in government are taking kickbacks to allow these police murders. They must have had some powerful evidence that people high up in government are taking payoffs to withhold investigations and withhold criminal charges when citizens are murdered. They must have presented to that grand jury some very convincing evidence for the grand jury regular people like you and me to have the nerve to indict a sitting vice president and a previous attorney general. But we never heard that evidence. And the beat goes on. I want you to know that mentally ill people are continually now murdered behind bars. And nobody is indicted. Nobody is arrested. Even in those rare occasions when medical examiners bring back a cause of death as being homicide, as they did in Daniel Lissenbigler's case. Daniel Lissenbigler was killed in Clay County Jail in Florida. And the medical examiner, I want you to know that I congratulate you on bringing forth a true cause of death. You wrote that it was homicide. Homicide means murder, but nobody to date has even been charged with the murder of this young teenager who was in jail only 10 days before he was suffocated to death. Suffocated to death for being a Christian. I said Daniel Lissenbigler was murdered in jail for being a Christian. And as the guards prepared to murder him, they asked him, "Where is your God now? Where is your Jesus now?" They murdered him and laughed at his Christianity. I'm not telling you what the Taliban did. I'm not telling you what ISIS did. I'm not telling you what Al-Qaeda did. I'm telling you what guards in Clay County Jail did to a young man for being a Christian in the United States of America. Yes. The mentally ill are laughed at and brutalized and mistreated continually, and the Department of Justice fails to investigate these crimes, fails to bring federal charges against these murderers. I ran across last night posters saying Kelly Thomas was murdered. Why are his murderers walking free? We all saw Kelly Thomas, a 33-year-old Caucasian homeless man. Not homeless because he didn't have relatives who loved him. Homeless by choice because he did not have the mental wherewithal to go by rules and regulations of households. Homeless and mentally ill. I was told that Kelly Thomas was looking around on the ground in a parking lot looking for cigarette butts when the police were called. And the police came and they beat him to death. Beat him and 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 beat him. And Kelly Thomas said, "Please, please, please, Daddy, Daddy, don't hit me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Please, please, please." And he begged and pleaded for his life. He made 31 pleading appeals to the murderous police officers while they continued to beat him and beat him and beat him to death until he died. He died a bloody pulp. He died days later in the hospital. And we can see him online. He's a bloody pulp laying on the bed. He's so black and blue, he looks like a black man because they beat him so furiously. And none of the police officers who did this horrid crime is in jail today because the jury got bamboozled and the federal government will not do its job to uphold justice and uphold Kelly Thomas's right to life. I say to you that mentally disabled people have a right to life given to them by God the Father. They have a human right to life. They have a civil right to life. Even the black ones, even Larry Neal, who was secretly snatched off the street and kept in Memphis Shelby County Jail for 18 days while police and officials lied and lied and lied to his family and social worker and denied having him in custody. What were you doing to Larry Neal? Were you waterboarding him? That is the charge that goes out regarding Mr. Stapley, a man who died in Stillwater Prison. Stillwater Prison. An inmate called a friend of mine that one day and said, "Can't you help this inmate? I can see in his cell, he's stretched out on a board in his cell. Mr. Stapley, a black inmate, was stretched out on a board in his cell." And he said every day, several times a day, the guards go in there and they always take a water hose. And when they go in there with their water hose, this inmate starts screaming and begging and screaming and begging. He's being tortured. I can't see exactly what they're doing to him. They always take a water hose, and I can see him laying on his board in there. But when they go in and crowd around, I can't see exactly what they're doing. But can't you stop it, Diana Sprouse? I'm locked up. You're free. Please call the prison warden. Please call the newspapers. Please call the Department of Justice and let them know that a patient is being tortured. And she did. She called the prison warden. She called the Department of Corrections for that state. And she also called the news media. But they were too late. They responded too late. And Stapley died. I believe they were waterboarding him. I read that the people who were the trained interrogation experts were sent to the War on Terror prisons after they had completed 40 hours of waterboarding training. And I didn't think of it at the time. It occurred to me much later. Who were they training on? How did they get 40 hours of waterboarding training in the USA before they got sent to the War on Terror camps to interrogate supposed terrorists? I read later that our own United States servicemen were waterboarded. And I believe that black mental patients in incarceration were waterboarded. Where did these interrogation experts complete their 40 hours of waterboarding training if not on black mental patients incarcerated? And I know they've acknowledged waterboarding military people as part of their training. So these are the circumstances we're living under. One of the responses that I received from the USDOJ regarding the secret arrest and murder of Larry Neal said that they cannot reveal to me the methods of his death because it would violate national security. Wow. It sounds like something was going on there. Sounds like something was going on there. And from the looks of things, from the looks of news reports, whatever was going on is still going on because San Carlos Correctional Facility did not reveal how this man, Christopher Lee Lopez, died on March 17, 2013 until last week. They didn't reveal that they had killed him and laughed and joked while he died. And that's okay with the Department of Justice. These are trying times. These are very trying times. As I started to tell you about this situation, I want you to know that stalkers who've been placed around my house shot their gun. I don't know if it came through or not, but that's what they do. When I tell you what's happening, they fire their weapons. They release pit bulls into Mary Neal's yard. And they send me emails that sometimes the first email I get after a broadcast talks about killing children. Sometimes the first email I get after I complete a broadcast have other terrorist threats. I want you to know that the justice system in America is very criminal, and they do not want us to discuss, especially not how the mentally ill are treated behind bars, especially not the mentally disabled people. People who are supposed to be protected not only by the U.S. Constitution and the Declaration of Human Rights, but also by other special documents because of their disability. We have the Americans with Disabilities Act. All of those laws are ignored. As Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, all we say to America is be true to what you wrote on paper. Be true to what you wrote on paper. But that's still a problem, Dr. King. These 50 plus years later, it's still a problem getting America to live up to the creeds and models and laws that it wrote on paper that protect citizens' rights. Speaking of citizens, the law dictionary says that a citizen is one who owes a debt of loyalty to a country and is entitled to protection by the country in return. That's what a citizen is. A person who owes a debt of loyalty to a country and is entitled to protection by that country in return. America acknowledges that. America acknowledges it so strongly that it will bomb countries that harm their citizens. Isn't that why Libya is in shambles today? Because Gaddafi was supposedly harming his citizens? Isn't that why the president of Iraq was hung and his country was bombed? Because he was supposedly harming his citizens? So America fully acknowledges that no country should harm its citizens. And they back it up with our soldiers and trillions of dollars worth of bullets and ammunition and bombs and drone planes. So they put their money where their mouth is, that it's wrong for a country to harm its own citizens. They will bum you over that. But every week, mentally ill people are killed. Extrajudicial assassinations here in America happen to the mentally ill every single week. And some of them, they cover them up. And the U.S. Department of Justice is complicit in these cover-ups. Why would the U.S. Justice Department, that was in overview of Memphis Shelby County Jail in 2003, allow that jail to go to release hearings and put forth documents and evidence that it is doing its job as far as cleaning up the jail and allow that jail to hide a murder that the U.S. DOJ had corresponded with the family about? Why would it do that? Why would that happen? Every signature on those papers, every one of them, have committed fraud against the Neal family and against the United States of America, which means they, for we, the people, are the government. You pay their salaries. You and I pay their salaries. We are their protection. My family pays taxes. I have close relatives in the military, active military right now. So we are the government, but we have some very criminal officials who are allowing and facilitating murders of our most disabled people on our American streets and behind bars. And they won't do a darn thing about it. They will go across seas and bomb other countries for killing their citizens, but they won't even ask wardens, why did you kill that man? Why did you allow your guards to kill that woman? Why did you allow that to happen? They won't ask them anything. Why do they do that? Why do they ignore the murders of citizens here in America and go bomb other countries supposedly to protect human rights? Why would that happen? Why? Well, Lacey County, Texas, grand jury decided that they're doing it in exchange for kickbacks. Well, Lacey County jury decided that being Vice President Dick Cheney and former U.S. Attorney General Antonio Gonzalez were a part of a plot to withhold federal investigations after jail abuses in exchange for private prison stock and other kickbacks. That's what the grand jury decided in Willacy County, Texas in 2008. Is that what's happening? Is that what is happening throughout this great land? Is that why police officers feel perfectly free to go and blow away young men like Michael Brown with their hands up, surrendered? Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. Boom, 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 boom. 11 shots were heard on the tape was released. And 6 hit him, including 2 in his head. Is that why police walk into Walmart and shoot down a young man who's talking on the phone with his back turned, who's been shopping, picked up a tour gun, is leaning on the tour gun with the shooting nozzle down on the floor? He's leaning on it, talking on the with his back turned. Is that why they would approach him and simply open fire? Boom, 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 boom. Shoot him in the back, John Crawford, until he's dead. Is that why men like Darren Rainey, mentally ill, incarcerated in Dade County Correctional Facility in Florida, can be drugged while he scream and fight for his life into a small shower and the guards turn on boiling water and he's screaming, help me, I'm sorry, help me please, oh it's hot, help me, help me, help me, please, until he's dead. And his screams and shouts for his life alarm another inmate so badly that he risked his own life to get the news to the media that they killed him. They killed him. I heard him. I heard him scream for his life. Has anybody gone to jail for that murder? Or do these correctional facilities pay off the U.S. Justice Department personnel so that they won't be called into account for the disabled United States of America? Is that what's happening? Jerome Murdaugh was taken into custody. A mentally ill veteran of the United States of America, mentally ill former U.S. Marine, who was seeking shelter on top of a building in Harlem during a cold winter night. I guess if he huddled close to the exhaust pipe, he might stay warm enough not to freeze to death. But police saw him up there, a vagrant, and they arrested him for vagrancy. The mentally ill are usually not dangerous. They're usually arrested on vagrancy charges, panhandling charges. They're arrested just for living. Living. Because it's illegal to be mentally ill in the United States of America. That is considered a crime. It's not considered an illness. It's considered a crime. They even changed the name of it from mentally ill to behavioral disorders. So you're misbehaving to be mentally ill. It's not called mental illness. It's called behavioral disorders. That's so that they can put the emphasis on how you behave instead of the condition that you have. Schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, autism. They want to take the emphasis away from the conditions, the health conditions that the mentally ill have and put the emphasis on their behavior that are really just symptoms of their illness. So they took Jerome Murdaugh into prison at Rikers Island and baked him to death. Slow roasted this mentally ill black veteran. Has anybody gone to jail for that? You know, this country has execution chambers. They have a place where they give the death penalty to murderers. They say they're killing these people for murder, but I don't think they are. If they were killing inmates because of murders they did, why have no policemen that I know of ever been on death row? Why is that? If they care so much about murders, why have no police officers ever been on death row, to my knowledge? Why is that? No country that helps to hide the murders of mentally ill people, disabled people, to have power to say, kill this one, kill that one. No country that stands behind murderers and helps them to stay free, and not only to stay free, but to keep their authority as law officers, deserves the right to say to another man or another woman, you will die for your murder, while it says to another guy, you're paid up, don't worry about it, go out and kill another one. Have a vacation on us. That is hypocrisy. No country that kills its own citizens under the color of law on a regular basis deserves to go and take your tax money and bomb other countries for doing the same thing. That is hypocrisy. Participation in hypocrisy. And you participate in it whenever you don't. Silence is consent. Silence is consent. So if you don't participate in resolving a problem, then your silence is a quiescence. You participate in facilitating the continuation of anything that you do not protest. So although they have stalkers they put in houses around my home who shoot their guns when I say something they don't want me to say, who walk by and turn loose pit bulls in my yard when I say something that they don't want me to say, when I publish articles that they don't want me to publish, they may fly helicopters over my house that stand still for up to 30 minutes using up perhaps your gas bought with your tax money, perhaps. Even though I have endured all of these things, I yet must obey God. For the Bible says at Proverbs 31, 8 and 9, that we're to speak for the poor and oppressed and all who are appointed to destruction. That's our job as Christians. And although, as President Obama said, America is no longer a Christian nation, it's still got a lot of Christians in it. A lot of people call on the name of Jesus. And in the days that's coming, even more people are going to call on the name of Jesus. But Jesus already said to you, why do you say to me, Lord, Lord, and do not the things that I say? He's not impressed that you believe in him. Even Satan believes and trembles. He's impressed with obedience. He says obedience is better than sacrifice. What have you done to obey Proverbs 31, 8 and 9, where it says that we're to speak up for the poor and oppressed and everyone who is appointed to destruction? What have you done about that? I am going to play for you a little tape that I made with a dead mentally ill inmate's family, Daniel Listenbigler. You can listen to the first part, at least, of our presentation that was made at Human Rights Demand on July 19th. 2014. I met with Daniel Lisbon's mother and his sister, and they talked about his murder because he announced to prison guards that he believed in Jesus Christ. He believed in God, and they killed him for it. A 19-year-old Caucasian American citizen. If all these things are happening to Caucasians, imagine what they're doing to black inmates. Well, we don't have to imagine it. We see what happened. Because I called in a hot shower. We see what's happening to the black ones. Jerome Murdoch was baked at Rikers Island. These are only two. If you want to read about more of the cruelty that's allowed against people with mental disabilities in the United States of America, we have a Justice Department that is accepting your paychecks fraudulently. Go to Dog Justice for the Mentally Ill. That's a blog. Dog Justice for the Mentally Ill. And you will see numerous incidents of brutality and murder, murders of mentally ill Americans that you allow with your silence and that you facilitate with your tax money without objecting to the continuous murders of your neighbors. The Bible says that if you don't speak against it, their blood is on your hands. You either share in the solution or you share in the problem. The Bible says you're either for me or against me. There is no middle ground. I'm sorry, silent Christians. I'm sorry, you who want to just go to church on Sunday and sing, holy, holy, holy. And nothing about these government murders. I'm sorry, but you can't sit with this. You have to take said. Be you either. He said, because if you're lukewarm, you make me sick, and I will spew you out like vomit. He calls Lucan's hot acid vomit that he will spew out of his mouth because you make him sick. That's what the Bible said. So you either get with the program of standing up for these handicapped people who are constantly brutalized and murdered, or you get with the program and go help them murder them, because that's how you're going to be treated. Their blood is on your silent hands. Their blood is on your hands. I know there are enough Christians in America to stop the murders and the incarceration of sick people. You, but some of you are prison investors. Some churches are even investing your pension funds in private prisons. I laughed at you. And God said he will laugh at you in the day of... Oh, let me let you listen to the story.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Thank you for joining us today on Human Rights Demand. My name is Mary Neal. I am Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We believe that no individuals should be persecuted, punished, incarcerated for reason of a common treatable health condition. And we also believe that people who have drug and alcohol dependencies are not helped, and society is not helped because they are incarcerated. We believe that sick people, whether they have addictions or whether they have mental illness, should be treated for their conditions and not punished. And so we want to thank you for joining us today. We have a tremendous show planned for you when we will present to you the wrongful death of Daniel Lisbon-Bigler. That's Daniel Lisbon-Bigler, who died in Clay County Jail at the age of 19. He died by suffocation while in a restraint chair. Daniel Lisbon-Bigler was a young man who was handcuffed behind his back, who was sprayed in the face with pepper spray. And as he sought to free his airways of the pepper spray, he was spitting and coughing, and mucus was running from his nose. And they covered his head with a spit bag, like those that you saw prisoners wearing on photographs taken in Guantanamo Bay. They covered his face with a hood, and his mucous membranes were swelling. They walked him down the hall, and they secured this young teenager in a restraint chair. His back showed signs of tasering. We don't know if they tasered him after he was secured in the chair or not. It's very likely that they tasered him after he was handcuffed. They secured him in the restraint chair, which has been known to cause many deaths. As a matter of fact, we know that the restraint chair caused the death of Sean LaBert, who was a great entertainer. Anyway, Daniel Listenbigler was secured to that restraint chair, and even though the guards were leaving the room and there was no more opportunity for him to spread saliva and mucus out of his nose on them, they did not remove the hood from his head. Daniel Listenbigler strangled to death. He suffocated to death right there in that restraint chair. Daniel Listenbigler died last March 2013. His wrongful death case is in litigation now. And we want to say that his death is not unlike other deaths that have happened and that have come to our attention recently regarding the mistreatment of mentally ill people in the state of Florida. We know that in Dade County Correctional Facility, a man named Mr. Darren Rainey, R-A-I-N-E-Y, was scalded to death. Guards dragged Mr. Rainey into a single shower, a small shower, and they turned on the hot water as high as it could go, and they scalded him so badly that his skin came off his muscle, and he died face up under scalding hot water in that tiny shower. One of his, one of the other inmates in that facility heard his screams. They heard him begging for his life, not unlike I imagine that Daniel Listenbigler did in that restraint chair. But the guards are very cruel in many correctional facilities throughout America. It is said that Daniel Listenbigler was in an observation area in the restraint chair that was right across from the guard station. So why was he not helped? Why did they not notice, oh, he still has that bag on his head. He's been sprayed in the face. He was complaining that he couldn't breathe. Let me go get that bag off his head. It doesn't matter that Daniel was right across from the guards. It doesn't matter that he was in clear view of them as he died, because if an inmate could hear Mr. Darren Rainey screaming and begging in that hot shower, and his cries for help were ignored, I want you to know that the cries for help are sometimes ignored by corrections officers. So without any further ado, I want to welcome you again to Human Rights Demand and introduce you to Ms. Valerie Listenbigler. She is the mother of Daniel Listenbigler, who was murdered in Clay County, Florida, jail. He was only 19 years old. He suffocated to death in a restraint chair. Welcome, Valerie. How are you today?
I'm good. And yourself?
I'm doing well, Valerie, and I want to give you our condolences again regarding your son's murder. And I want you to know that, unfortunately, you and your family has joined a growing family of Americans whose civil rights have been denied and they have been deprived of life. So I'm sorry about your son, Daniel Listenbigler. He was a very handsome young man. I invite the audience to see a picture of him at the article that I posted for him at Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. It's called, "And Then Daniel Listenbigler Died." I input in that article an excerpt from an excellent article written by Susan Cooper Eastman at folioweekly.com. She wrote an excellent article about Daniel and about you and how his death has affected you and your family. And I'm so glad that you and your family are on air today to discuss Daniel's death, to discuss the kind of young man he was, to discuss your challenges as you strive for justice in the case of his wrongful death. I'm going to turn it over to you right now, and I also want the radio audience to know that if you call in, you will have an opportunity to comment and ask questions. Call in at 347-857-3293. Again, that's 347-857-3293. Please help Ms. Valerie Listenbigler and her family by calling your friends, your relatives, your social networks. Let them know that we're on the air with the family of Daniel Listenbigler, who was murdered in Clay County Jail in Florida. And please share this video after the broadcast. Share this tape, brother, at Human Rights Demand with your social networks. Go right ahead, Ms. Valerie. You speak first. We will let the audience comment and ask questions and speak. And I also invite families that have had similar experiences with wrongful deaths and brutality to call in and have your say also. So go right ahead, Ms. Valerie. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, and thank you for having me and my family. I'd like to thank everybody who is listening. It's been hell. It hasn't been easy. I'm still in shock. What I'd like to say is that Daniel was an amazing kid. From the first time I felt him move in my belly to first time I seen him start to crawl and then swivel around and sit up, to his first birthday that he started walking on and he never stopped. The dedication of being a cowboy when he was a little boy. He was a huge John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, Chuck Norris fan. You know, he used to say a real cowboy sleeps with his hat and boots on. So he was a cowboy for about 6 years. He raced methanol carts that ran 35 miles an hour from the time he was 5 till he was 11. And in that time, Daniel only did a half a year in first grade and a half a year in third grade to fourth grade, because he was advanced. We found out early on that he was advanced with numbers. He was doing trigonometry and calculus at 15. You know, he was a very loving kid. He was not a troublemaker as a kid. He just wanted to be a kid. He loved life, and he had goals, and he had a future. And I know he was looking forward to when I got out of the work release program I was in. He was looking forward to us going up north and starting over, being around his little brother, Timothy, who he loves and adores, and his sister, Marissa, and all that was taken away from him. I know March 12th of 2013, I received a call at the work release center I was at that my son was found in his cell on a routine check, unresponsive from an unknown medical condition. And I hit the floor. And about a week later, other inmates, as they were being released or they were able to call their families, I know one inmate, after he had seen the newspaper article about, you know, Clay County Sheriff's Office representative also told the public that, too, that he was just found in his cell on a routine check, unresponsive from an unknown medical condition. So when this inmate read this the next day, the 13th of March, he wrote a letter to the state prosecuting attorney saying that's not what happened to that kid. And he described in full detail what had happened. Thankfully, other inmates had family that could call, and they could, you know, get a hold of police abuse and file a report, because I was still unaware of how my son had actually died. I just thought he was found in a cell. So when they, when other inmates started coming forward and saying and describing in full detail how my son had died, I'd called, you know, to see if that was true or not, and I couldn't get an answer on how my son had died. I had to wait 5.5 months to get a coroner's report that confirmed everything that the inmate said and not what I was told by a robbery homicide detective who did not identify himself when he called the work release center, informing me that my son was just found in a cell on a routine check, unresponsive from an unknown medical condition. So now we had to file a federal lawsuit to try to get answers. On March 14th, I wrote my son, my dear precious son, Daniel, a promise letter. And I wrote, "This is my promise to you. I will get justice for you. I will miss you with every breath I take. I love you more than words could ever express. My sweet baby boy, your memory will never, ever die. I will fight and fight for you until my death, my last breath, leaves my body. You are my heart and my soul. I ache for the justice you will get. You, my son, are loved. I'm so sorry for your pain. I will get justice for you, my dear sweet son. I pray for your peace. I ask you, Lord, to give me to give my son justice, your son. Lord, bring to light what was done in darkness. Amen." So that is my promise to my son, Daniel. I'd also like to read you an article about inmates' treatment criticized in Metro. Prisoner died in Clay Jail. His father said he was told son was restrained. If I can't see that. I'm going to have my daughter read it because I can't see it.
Where'd you go?
Right there, just start there.
The father of a 19-year-old inmate who died Tuesday in the Clay County Jail said he was told his son was in a restrictive suit in a restraint chair when a deputy noticed something wrong. Considering bizarre behavior that led to Daniel Winston-Bickler Jr.'s arrest, he should have been treated for mental instability in a medical setting and not as an unruly prisoner, his father said Thursday. The 46-year-old Winston-Bickler, who lives in Fort Pierce, said he has been told by two law enforcement officers that his son was in a restraint chair when he was discovered. One of the officers said the teenager was also wearing a suit designed to restrict movement. Apart from saying the 19-year-old was found unconscious by a guard making his normal rounds about 9 a.m. and that attempts were made to revive him, authorities said. They are not releasing additional information until an investigation is complete. Winston Bigler was on medication for the hallucinations and other mental health issues during a 15-month jail sentence in Jacksonville that ended in November. Ended in November, Daniel Lynch Miller Sr. said. Continue reading. You don't have other part of this.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, and also, this was released on March 14th. It said, inmate death leads to FDL investigation. Green Cove Springs, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, is investigating the cause of death of a Clay County jail inmate who died in custody on March 12th. Daniel Joseph Linsenbigler Jr., 19, was found unconscious when jail staff made routine rounds around 9 a.m., according to a Clay County Sheriff's Office spokesperson. Multiple detention personnel responded and performed CPR on the inmate in an attempt to revive him, said Mary Justino, Clay County Sheriff's Office representative. Their agents, along with those of Clay County Fire and Rescue personnel who transported him to Orange Park Medical Center, were unsuccessfully, and Linsenbigler was pronounced dead at OPMC at approximately 10 a.m., which we were already told that he was deceased by the time the EMTs got to him. He was unresponsive. He was deceased. Justino said it is standard procedure to call on the FDLE to investigate when an inmate dies in county custody. FDLE representatives will work in conjunction with CCSO detectives, the Jacksonville Medical Examiner's Office, and CCSO Detention Bureau staff to investigate what led to Linsenbigler's death, she said in a prepared statement. Linsenbigler had been living in a suite at the Stay Suites Extended Stay Motel at 1656 Wells Road when he was arrested March 2nd on one count of trespassing in an occupied structure and a charge of public indecent exposure. CCSO officials are trying to locate his next of kin as he had no relatives of record in Clay County. March 2nd, Linsenbigler was charged with allegedly going into a woman's room at the motel and knocking items off the table while yelling biblical scriptures. The victim stated she saw a white man with no clothing on running down the corridor of the second floor saying he could save everybody and he was God, stated the police report. Linsenbigler had been held on $5,004 bond and was awaiting trial, a March 14th arraignment. My son was robbed of his future. He was robbed of his dreams. He'll never get to have a driver's license, get married, have a career, a family of his own. What was done to him was unjust, and I want answers, and I'm not going to stop until I get answers, unless the good Lord comes and gets me. I love you, Daniel Joseph Linsenbigler Jr. Rest in peace, my beloved son. I can't really go into too much.
Thank you so much, Valerie. Reading that letter that you wrote to your son, I tell you, I had to go off air and cry with you over the death of Daniel because this story is repeated throughout America over and over. People with mental disabilities, drug and alcohol addictions are treated as though they don't have a right to life. They're killed. They're killed doing lunacy arrests. They're killed in our jails and prisons. And it is usual and ordinary for our officials, law enforcement officials, to attempt to cover up these murders as they covered up at first Daniel's murder. And so I'm so glad that you are a mother who is standing up for the right to life that Daniel had and that many people in incarceration still have, but their rights to life are being threatened also. I feel that a lot of this is happening because mentally ill people and people who have dependencies on drugs and alcohol are being used as prison profiteering commodities. There are insufficient beds in mental hospitals, and that is one thing that we're fighting for when we stand up for H.R. 3717, which is a congressional bill that's pending right now before the U.S. Congress. And it was introduced by a Representative Timothy Murphy, who was a practicing psychologist before he became an elected official. He's a representative out of the state of Pennsylvania, and he has before Congress right now the Helping Families with Mental Health Crisis Act. If that bill is passed, we will have an increase of beds at mental hospitals because Medicaid insurance will be resumed for certain facilities. We'd also have AOT programs, that's assisted outpatient treatment programs, that offer great services, mandated psychiatric treatment, and subsistence assistance for people who need it. Also, the bill provides for relaxation of the HIPAA rules so that families can know about their loved one's mental health condition and can also get the information that they need in order to be better advocates for the people they love. And it, moreover, this is very important to your case, Valerie. H.R. 3717, the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act, allows CIT training, that's Crisis Intervention Team training, for police officers and for prison guards. So we can remove the excuse they use so often. Whenever they kill someone with mental illness, they always say, well, the police officer lacked training in dealing with mental illness. The jail guards lack training in dealing with people with mental illness. That excuse has been used and overused. The truth is that over half the people in prisons are mentally ill. So they have training. They ignore the training that they do have very often and kill our loved ones and our friends and our neighbors who have vulnerabilities that are exploited throughout the nation. I'm going to go ahead now, Valerie, and accept some of your callers. And I'm going to start with the one who's been holding longer, and I will go down the list, and then we will come back to you. We're going to be on air until 5 p.m., so everyone will get an opportunity to speak, so don't worry. Just hang on. I'm starting with your first caller now. Good afternoon, 5405. You're on the air at Human Rights Demand. 5405 are your last four digits. Do you want to ask a question or make a comment?
Hey, Mary, it's me, Anna Santiago from New York. I'm hearing the story of this mother. My condolence goes for her because I am a mother of a lifer, too. It's shock, you know, when you hear these mothers, you know, talking about their loved one behind bars, and we feel hopeless. And I understand this mom complete. And we're all here to support her so we could fight what she needs to fight. And as a mother, I'm going to stand by whatever decision you need to make. And you know, Mary, you got my, I got your back here in New York, whatever you need, because you know I'm a mom.
Well, thank God for you, Anna. I think that
thank
mothers
you.
And fathers and brothers mm-hmm. and sisters and advocates throughout the nation need to come forward and stand up for one another. You know, there is too much fear in America. We need to stand up against the prison industrial complex that chooses to victimize our loved ones. There are many people who are incarcerated. Some of them are guilty as charged, but it doesn't matter whether a person is innocent or guilty. They have no right to give a death sentence to people who were not given a death sentence by the court. As a matter of fact, I don't think the court has the right to issue death sentences, period. But certainly people like Daniel, who only did a misdemeanor, if that, should not be murdered behind bars. Your next caller is 7735. 7735. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Mary?
I am doing well. This is Leona Brando, who is the director of New Vision Organization. That's a prisoner activist organization. And I will let Leona Brando speak to you now.
Okay. You know, I'm listening to this mother, and I'm really frustrated. I mean, this is beyond comprehension that anybody in this country, any government, can allow these kind of things to happen. And I feel for the mother, and I, as you said, Mary, you broke down and cried because you went through it with your own brother, you know, who died unnecessarily, and he wasn't even guilty of anything. But to have this happen to even a teenager, to have it happen to anyone is bad enough. But I'm listening to it, and I'm really getting sick to my stomach just thinking about how these things are going on. And I had seen something on Facebook that was written by John F. Kennedy. And me, coming from Cape Cod, living 6 miles from the Kennedy compound, I remember the Kennedys very well. And this man, six days before he was assassinated, he was saying that he had planned on exposing this country, this government, exposing the whole concept of incarcerating, enslaving all men, women, and children. And this goes back to the days of the Hitler's time, you know, and the mass murders. This is happening too much. I just wanted to say real quickly that right now, Valerie, if you can, sometime give me a call. My number is 508-533-7735. We have a couple of attorneys, and we also have a vice president who is planning on actually, they've connected with Dr. Wood and Dr. Russell and some others throughout the country, and they're going to be doing some kind of a press conference on all of these deaths and all of these abuses. So if you can give me a call sometime, and perhaps we'd like to include you in this so that you can speak out. So your son's death is not going to be in vain, okay? Sometimes they say sometimes good things come out of bad things. And I just want your brother, as well as Mary. And Mary, I was doing something this morning about you because you're an icon in this country and pretty much globally now. You have been such an advocate and an activist for the abused and for the mentally ill. And if there were more advocates like yourself, we would be in good shape. But we cannot continue to allow this thing, these abuses, these deaths, these things to be happening. I don't care what color, what race, what religion, what culture. It shouldn't be happening to anybody. And I just want to say I admire you, Mary, for all that you have done to bring these issues to the forefront. And Valerie, you're a strong woman. Your son would be very proud of you because to go through something like that, I know it's taken everything out of you. But again, we want you to use that as a means to keep your son's name alive, as Mary has done with her brother Larry. And that's all I want to say. Give me a call or even go on the website, New Vision Organization, Inc., and get the information on there. Get in contact with us so I can connect you with our attorney, Anchor Jane from New York, and our president, William Grisby. You and the others that are going to be going before the press conference will definitely be getting the word out to put a stop to this so that others are not going to have to go through what either one of you have gone through. That's all I have to say, Mary, and I thank you for allowing me to say that.
We really appreciate you, Leona Brando. Leona Brando was a social worker, and for years she worked with families that are in negative circumstances. And then she found herself in the same situation as Ms. Anna, who called first, who our first guest speaker, who gave comments regarding Daniel Listenbigler's murder. Her son is a lifer, and she became a prisoner activist, and what a prisoner activist she is. Please look online for newvisionorganization.inc New Vision Organization, Inc., NBO. Leona Brando has a radio show here at Human Rights Demand Channel every Monday at 3 p.m. And she brings guests who are either former prisoners or people with expert knowledge regarding prisoners' rights. So please join us on Mondays at 3 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time for the MBO Hour. I want to go on to our next caller. We have a caller who's been waiting 23 minutes and listening to the show, and I'm going to put 3066 online right now. Hello, 3066.
Hi, Mary. How are you? My name's Holly.
Hello,
and
Holly Alston. This is Holly Alston. Her son is one of the people that assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill is advocating for. Her son's name is Terrell Scott. Please look up the first article I wrote about Terrell Scott to get an overview of his situation. He was a teenage sex slave. So look up Terrell, T-E-R-R-E-L-L, Scott, S-C-O-T-T. He was a teenage sex slave. Go ahead, Ms. Alston.
Hi, Valerie. I know saying my condolences won't even cover what the hurt, the sadness, the despair that you're going through with the loss of your son. I don't even know where to begin. It pisses me off that this has happened to your child, and how here in America this is going on. But in my opinion, they don't care. I know there's advocates that say they're going to do things, and I really, really hope whoever's listening, if they're sick and tired of what's happening to the mentally ill, people who are on drugs, whatever, the thing is, if you are poor and you don't have money, you are screwed here in America. I am so sick and I'm so tired of hearing people saying they're going to do something. Now, here's a mother that her son was killed in prison and other people. When I saw my son last night, I told him I was going to go on the radio show, and what they did to your son, he is aware. They do it in Northampton County Prison. They put the spit rags, they put all those things on. So this isn't, they cover up a lot of stuff, but this is what's going on in these prisons. And and I don't want to sound selfish. I hope that this does not happen to my son, that he will be killed in prison. He was already almost killed in prison. He was on life support. But if this, this isn't really about me. This story is about what has happened to your son. I am so sorry. And I really hope the advocates, whoever is listening, people who have money, officials, lawyers, judges, these prisons are so corrupt. It's about money. And they don't care about the poor. They don't care about the sick. Okay? And I don't, karma, excuse my language, is a bitch. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be sound so angry, but I just have so much rage and hurt, and I'm so sorry that this has happened to your child.
Thank you, Ms. Holly Alston. And we want to hear an update during this show about your son, Terrell Scott, who was arrested supposedly for violating probation when two of the appointments for probation were set for days before he was ever released from prison. Can you imagine someone being held for violating probation when two of the days that he supposedly violated probation, he had never been released from prison in Pennsylvania. And the third day that he supposedly violated probation is an appointment they set for him while they knew he was already an inpatient in a mental hospital. He was removed from the mental hospital and imprisoned instead, saying that he violated probation by seeking help for his PTSD, which he got by spending 4.5 years in a Pennsylvania prison without trial. his right to trial was denied, and that's Terrell Scott. I ask you to please look online. My name is Mary Neal, N-E-A-L, and I keep everyone updated on their atrocious behavior, absolutely atrocious, by the state of Pennsylvania regarding Terrell Scott. And Holly, please don't give up hope. We believe in God, and we know that God loves justice. We have another caller at 4257. 4257.
Hello, Mary. This is Dr. William Grigsby, Vice President for New Vision Organization. How are you?
Ladies and gentlemen, I
can you hear me?
Hello,
Valerie.
Yes, I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Valerie, you're on the line right
yes,
now.
Yes, I'm here.
And talk to your guest, please.
Hello.
Hello, Valerie. I just want to send out my condolences, and I want to echo again what our founder and president Leona said earlier. I just want to let you know that the entire New Vision organization. All of us 70 volunteers, we are here. We are a virtual network, but we are nationwide, and we will be supporting you. If you just give us a call, we'll set up a case for you. But I just want to let you know that we are here to support you as well.
Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. And I definitely will call you. I've got your number. And I will call you today. Hello? I'm still here.
Valerie?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, audience. I was just on the phone with Mr. Burgess. He's a gentleman that I was introduced to by Ms. Valerie Lissenbigler. He's someone who also lost a son in the Florida. And the death of his son, as I understand it, was successfully covered up. It was covered up until now. And so we're going to try to bring Mr. Burgess on the phone with you right now and see if he can tell you about it. Let me see. I have another caller. Let's see. That seems to have been waiting. Hello, this is 5405 on the air. Is this Anna? Anna?
Yeah, I'm here.
5405. This is Anna.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, then. I'm looking for Mr. Burgess. And when we find him on the line, we will let him speak about his covered-up murder. Mr. Burgess, thank you so much, Mary. Yes. Mr. Burgess, are you on the line now? We have quite a bit of cyber stalking. Because, you see, when you talk about... When you talk about prison issues, you're not only talking about, you know, the local jails, the local prisons. This is the United States Department of Justice. Their job is to protect the rights of institutionalized people because every police department, every prison, every jail operates under the United States Department of Justice. the United States Department of Justice brings together all of your agencies, the CIA, the FBI, all of that. Now, NSA, the spying organization, and the cyber-stalking organization, that's under the Department of War. Now, lots of people don't know, but NDAA, which is the national, whatever it is. I'm going to look for those conditions. I always call it the NDAA. But in our only for that, for war with other countries, but it provides for Americans to be housed in concentration camps, and that's been a great point of contention for most people. And it also provides for cyber war. This cyber war can be carried out with people in other countries, but also it's something that I find is carried out against Americans who are operating in our freedom of press rights. So we're looking for Mr. Burgess to call, and hopefully he will be allowed to get through. I want to ask Ms. Valerie, has she encountered, besides that initial point when authorities were lying about how her son died, have you encountered any cyber-stalking activities, any funny business with your phone or your computers to let you know that you have been targeted for surveillance since you were seeking justice? Has that happened to you yet?
Yes, but a little bit with my phone. I don't do any social networking. Even if I could, I don't do it. I'm old school. But here recently I got a DUI, and I just happened to have a off-duty deputy that was following me, and they were more interested in who was Daniel, because I have it written on my car, Clay County Homicide, Justice for Daniel, policeabuse.com. And I got arrested for a DUI, and I got treatment like Paris Hilton when I got to the jail, and they got me out of there pretty quick. But it was just odd that an off-duty deputy, which I believe is not a deputy, I believe she's a detective, in Martin County, so she followed me over Martin County line. But nevertheless, I'm not going to stop fighting for my son. I'm going to continue to fight for him. I'm his biggest advocate, and I know he would have done it for me because I, too, am familiar with Department of Corrections. The only thing that's consistent inside those walls is inconsistency. I have stories to tell that would floor you. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because I know that if it would have happened to me, my son Daniel, my best friend, would be fighting for me right now. And I'm never going to let it go. If you go on YouTube, you can get a taste of these sadistic sociopaths. You go on YouTube and you put on their Clay County Homicide, you'll get 3 hours and 41 minutes of their testimonies. Their accounts of the stories that they have to tell, and they sound like sadistic sociopaths. And it's a hard pill to swallow every day, but just know I'm not going anywhere unless the good Lord comes and gets me. Thank you.
Absolutely. I certainly understand your sentiments about that. And we all are here to support you and congratulate you on taking a strong stance against the injustice which your son died by. And we want to thank God that you have attorneys who are representing you in litigation against Clay County Jail right now. And we pray that God gives them good success regarding your lawsuit in this wrongful death matter. We want to thank God for quickly pulling the cover off Daniel Listenberger's death. Listen, Bigler, I'm sorry, it's a lot of syllables for me, but I thank God for pulling the shroud of cover-up off his murder so quickly. My own brother, Larry Neal, was a free man. He was a man with a long history of severe mental illness. He had been hospitalized for mental illness for roughly 20 years before individuals such as him were released from mental hospitals. Actually, I use the term evicted. They were evicted from the nation's mental hospitals when Medicaid was withdrawn from psychiatric inpatients. Many of them were not as blessed as Larry was. They did not have a large family to look after them. And many of them died on our streets of starvation. Many of them froze to death. This happened during the 1970s. And during the 70s and 80s, America had an absolutely humongous homeless population. And many of these people, if not most of them, were persons who had been released from mental hospitals. The reason I feel it was done was so that those same people could be not deinstitutionalized, but transinstitutionalized into the nation's jails and prisons. And when the prison population in America swole to the point that there was overcrowding every place, they created a problem, and then they resolved it by instituting private prisons and jails. So it was through deinstitutionalizing mentally ill people in America that this tremendous industry grew up called private prisons and jails. Today, private prisons and jails and even our public facilities have 1.25 million mentally ill people therein. So the mentally ill are still the backbone of America's prison system, where 2.3 to 2.5 million people are incarcerated right now. Over half of them have mental health conditions. Over 60% of the people in solitary confinement are mentally ill people. Furthermore, on our streets, over 50% of the victims of police violence are mentally ill people. So you can see that we don't really have overcrowded jails and prisons from any normal reason. We have them because we stopped treating mental illness as a health condition in order to misuse that population as prisoners. They're being misused as prisoners because of the great amount of money that CCA and other private prison companies earn. And many of our big American companies are taking advantage of the prison population when they use prison laborers instead of hiring free people. Right now, there's a push on from the White House and others to upgrade minimum wage in America to $11 an hour. But I say to you that there should also be a push on by Washington to eliminate prison profiteering. If the industries that are used to free labor, in Georgia, prisoners get zero wages an hour. If we eliminate the possibility of getting free and cheap slave labor from prisoners, then we would go a long way toward fighting this mass incarceration. They should have to pay all workers in America minimum wage, whatever minimum wage is. The minimum wage that prisoners earned could go to A, pay for their incarceration, B, pay their victims if there are any victims. A lot of the crimes that people are incarcerated for don't have to do with finances, but many of them do. So pay restitution to victims. And C, they should pay their child support. These big industries are incarcerating people and working them for free when their children are left for taxpayers to support. If the industries had to pay minimum wage, then the prisoners would have money to support their own children and get that burden off the taxpayer. And then the last thing that their money should go for
after paying something for their own incarceration, after paying back their victims, if there are any, and after paying their child support, the last thing their money should go to is to their reentry fund. Prisoners are released penniless. In Georgia, their release was just $25. That's $10 of their own money and $15 from the state, probably interest from their own money. Some of them have been working for 20 years behind bars, and their release was only $25. $25 won't even pay for their meals for a week. So they're set up to return to prison because they're set up to recidivate. They're set up to, again, do something considered wrong and be rearrested. Because $25 will not feed a person for a week. So we need to stop slavery in America, and it needs to begin with making all these big companies, Microsoft, Boeing Airlines, the U.S. government, all of them need to pay minimum wage for prisoner labor, and that way there will be no escape to minimum wage, and the money can go to the prisoners' families, to their victims, to their own incarceration, and also to a reentry fund so that prisoners will have a way to start their new life when they leave behind prison bars. So I just want to put that in there, and I want to check again to see if Mr. Burgess managed to come online. Mr. Burgess, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So you're calling. What are your last four digits?
For 8072.
Okay. We so much appreciate your calling in today. This is Human Rights Demand. That's the name of this channel, Human Rights Demand. You know, Frederick Douglass was an abolitionist of the 1800s, and he said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. And so we believe that here at Block Talk Radio, Human Rights Demand Channel, and so we're making a demand today for human rights for prisoners. And I believe you called because you want to join us in making that demand. Is that right, Mr. Burgess?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, go right ahead and tell us. I talked to Ms. Valerie, and she asked me to call you because she said that your son was also murdered in a Florida correctional facility. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, tell us about that, please. I understand it's been a cover-up.
Yes. Well, both myself and my younger brother served 25 years in the Navy as a law enforcement officer, and I also was a law enforcement officer here in Arizona, and I was in corrections also. I dealt with a lot of prisoners, been to school for corrections officers training, and, that's a lot of my background for that area. My son was incarcerated because he had so-called was a lookout for a burglary that was in progress, and they implicated him in it, and he was the only one who paid back all his restitution and complied with it, and he got down to like his last 2.5 months of probation. And he would have been adjudicated of the crime if he had completed it. But because of a egotistical probation officer, found a way to violate him. And I had gone to the attorney about it, and there was nothing we could do because once they violate you, they violate you, and the judges won't sway on what they have to say. So anyways, he had gone back into the jail, been incarcerated back into the jail again to finish off his last 3 months of probation. And he was having a hard time in there, and they had put him in segregation. So segregation, they told me, they put him in there because he had said he had blood or something, and they felt that he needed to be incarcerated separately from the rest of the prison population. And that's where he stayed for almost a month and a half. While he was in there, I'd visited him a couple times. Very difficult to get in to visit. They had some really stupid rules down there. I couldn't understand why until finally I found out why, because they don't have enough officers working the jail. And they didn't want to hire any more officers to work the jail, so they were working officers 10-hour shifts, and most times there wasn't more than six officers for this whole jail, which at any one time was housing anywhere from 200 to 300-something prisoners. Anyways, we get a call from a chaplain comes out from the jail and advises me that my son was in the hospital, that it was a suicide, so we had gone up to the hospital and they had him on life support, and they came in and told us that...
Ladies and gentlemen, I know you were enjoying that presentation. That was the Daniel Listen Bigler Show, dated July 19th, 2014. It is here in archives at Human Rights Demand at Blog Talk Radio. Listen to the entire presentation at any time. We want to let you know how much we appreciate your joining us on Human Rights Demand at Blog Talk Radio. You've been listening to the Human Rights for Prisoners March. Yes, I am Mary Neal. I'm the director for the Human Rights for Prisoners March. Join us every Sunday at 3 p.m. when we take off and march for human rights for prisoners. Join us every Monday night at National Network in Action, where we continue our Human Rights for Prisoners March. Thank you. God bless you. Join us again at Human Rights Demand. Goodbye, everybody.